Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to BCE's Q1 2016 results conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Thane Fotopoulos. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Wayne. Good morning to everyone on the call. With me here today, as usual, are George Cope, our President and CEO, as well as Glen LeBlanc, our CFO. As a reminder, our first quarter results package and other disclosure documents, including today's slide presentation, are available on BCE's investor relations webpage. Also, because of our annual general meeting that is taking place this morning, we'll be ending the call a little bit earlier than usual, so we'll take as many calls, or rather as many questions as time permits after George and Glen are done with their formal remarks. However, before we get started, I'd like to draw your attention to the safe harbor statement on slide two. Information in this presentation and remarks made by the speakers today will contain statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking and therefore subject to risks and uncertainties. These forward-looking statements represent our expectations as of today and accordingly are subject to change. Results may differ materially. We disclaim any obligation to update forward-looking statements except as required by law. A discussion of these factors that may affect future results is contained in BCE's filings with both the Canadian Securities Commissions and the SEC and are also available on our corporate website. With that, over to George.
Great. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Thane, and thanks everyone for joining us. I'm on to our first slide called Q1 Review. In terms of the quarter, the service revenue growth of 1.3% and the focus on cost management delivered a very positive 3.3% increase in BCE's EBITDA in the quarter, and also very pleased with the margin expansion of the company to overall 41%. Pleased with our share of broadband customer growth in the first quarter with the 93,000 total combined wireless postpaid IPTV and internet net subscriber additions, particularly on the internet side, where we saw some pretty intense competition in the last month of the quarter. I'll comment on that in a moment and on the other results. The wireless financials once again were excellent with 5.3% service revenue growth and 6.9% growth in EBITDA, and there as well driving margin expansion on service revenue to 48.2%. On the wireline side, for the seventh consecutive quarter, we had positive EBITDA growth of 1.3% as a 3.4% decline in our operating costs also gave us the headway for an expanded margin to 42%, providing us ample room for our fiber investments that we're making across our footprint. Media had a very strong quarter with EBITDA up 2.8% on revenue growth of 2.1%, driven also through some significant restructuring that we did in the fourth quarter. In fact, even without some of the small acquisitions, we had organic EBITDA growth. I think most positively for us is the continued progress on the service agenda, where we saw churn reduce on all three of our portfolios, and we're doing that. As we go through the market with the investments, we're seeing a reduction in our operating costs through those improvements. All in all three of the divisions, positive EBITDA growth in the quarter, and that is our expectation on the entire year that all three groups should remain EBITDA positive in 2016. It's our 42nd consecutive year-over-year quarterly growth of EBITDA. The first quarter, although a long way from year-end, is consistent with our dividend growth model, and the strong cash flow in the quarter certainly gives us confidence that we're heading in the right direction for the continuation of our dividend growth model into 2017. Turning to wireless, very pleased with the 26,000 net adds in the seasonally slow quarter of the first quarter of wireless, roughly almost two times that of our largest competitor. Also pleased again, as I mentioned, that our churn improved in the quarter down to 1.15%, and we continue to see strong ARPU growth of 3.6% as customers continue to migrate to our LTE network, and we continue to manage our prices in a disciplined way in the marketplace. Cost of acquisition was up 9.3% in the quarter, part of that driven through the postpaid mix, which is really where our focus is, and of course, the weaker Canadian dollar. I'm particularly pleased that our retention spend held stable year-over-year at 11.8% of service revenue, even though we're within that 12-month window of the double cohort, and we actually, even holding that number constant as a percent of revenue, were able to see a reduction in churn. Our LTE Advanced services are now available to 49% of Canadians, providing speeds effectively of 25 to 100 megs, and at the end of the year, 75% of the population will have that access on LTE Advanced. Turning to wireline results, I mentioned we had 20,000 internet net adds in the quarter. Where we particularly saw it softer was on the wholesale side. In fact, a large part of the impact in the quarter was in the wholesale marketplace. And so we're fine with it because, quite frankly, the consumer direct retail is clearly where more of the margin is for us. And you can see that in the note that residential ARPU was up 10% year over year on the internet side. 48,000 IPTV net adds, very pleased with. And I thought it was important to draw out that we actually had 20,000 net adds in our footprint on TV. And so the satellite losses, obviously a significant number of those were also outside of our wireline footprint, and we would expect that to continue. The NAS losses improved slightly year over year. As I mentioned on the media side, a strong quarter, continued leadership in audiences, both on the conventional side and for the top 10 specialty channels on the English side of the marketplace. Very pleased that TSN and RDS were the most watched English and French language sports networks in the first quarter of the year, given how important that quarter typically is in the hockey area, where clearly that's not all of our content. And also those two channels were number one in specialty in both of their markets. We rolled out TMN nationally, as we talked about last quarter, on March 1st, so off to a strong start there. And on that consolidation, I think we literally added possibly one to three resources in terms of additional employees. In Canada, continues to lead, quite frankly, in North America from 4K production. We're in a pretty good competitive battle, but that's a benefit to the consumers, where from our perspective, we did our first broadcast in 4K of a Raptor game in January. We carried the first ever North American award show broadcast on the Junos and also carried the Masters in 4K. We launched Crave Direct to consumers, as everyone knows, in January. In the first 90 days, we surpassed 100,000 customers, and we now know into this quarter we have 100,000 paying subscribers as well. So off to a pretty good start there on the direct side. And remember, everyone, that is to complement our distribution strategy through our BDU partners who also sell the product in the marketplace. Turning to slide 8, just a couple comments on our continued service progress. And we see two key things happening here. As we make the investments, our service metrics improve and costs come out of the operation. Calls in the quarter down 14% year over year. Self-service up 30 million visits in Q1 over a year ago. Customer complaints down 16%. Importantly, residential assurance down 29%. Assurance would mean repairs. And where we particularly are seeing the benefits are as we roll out fiber, now that we're at 2.5 million footprint, the amount of work required on assurance drops significantly. A residential churn down on 5TV, internet churn down, and wireless postpaid churn down. And our wireless network ranked by three independent organizations as the fastest in Canada. So all the customer service metrics moving the right way, and the best evidence of that is quite frankly our reduction in churn across the board. With that, let me turn the presentation over to Glenn.
Thank you, George, and good morning, everyone. I'll start with a quick high-level review of our first quarter consolidated results on slide 10. A very solid start to the year with continued industry-leading wireless financial performance, steady wireline growth, and media results that contributed positively to the healthy EBITDA and free cash flow growth that was in line with our plan. Service revenue was up 1.3%, driven by our growth services, which collectively increased 3.1% year over year. Product revenues were down $31 million, or 8%, compared to Q1 of last year. This was a result of the intensely competitive promotional handset offers, particularly in the second half of the quarter, and reduced spending by large enterprise customers. Of course, these revenues carry little to no margins. As George mentioned, but I can't help but mention it again, EBITDA increased a very healthy 3.3% on positive year-over-year growth at all three Bell segments. This yielded a 1 percentage point increase in our consolidated margins to 41%, which was driven by exceptional service revenue flow through to EBITDA of 112% that reflected strong wireless ARPU growth, higher revenue per household, and well-controlled operating costs. Adjusted EPS of 85 cents per share was in line with plan, up 1.2% year over year, while free cash flow increased $187 million to $418 million, even with a 3% increase in capital spending this quarter. So, overall, a very solid quarter financially and consistent with our guidance targets we provided in February, underscoring our continued focus on subscriber profitability and price discipline. Turning to slide 11 on our wireless segment, service revenues was up 5.3% on strong data revenue growth and reflected increased smartphone penetration, greater LTE data usage, and a higher percentage of customers on two-year contracts. This drove industry-leading ARPU growth of 3.6%, making our 25th consecutive quarter of year-over-year growth a truly remarkable achievement. Product revenue decreased 18.1% due to the competitors' rich promotional handset offers in the quarter that we matched and fewer year-over-year customer upgrades. Wireless EBITDA was the financial highlight of the quarter, growing 6.9% and delivering a 70 basis point increase in service revenue margin to 48.2%. This result was driven not only on the back of higher ARPU, but also by spending discipline as evidenced by our operating costs, which were essentially stable in the quarter, even with a $23 million in higher year-over-year spending on customer retention and COA. Bell Wireless also continued to contribute significantly to overall BCE free cash flow generation in Q1, with growth in EBITDA less CapEx of 6.8%. as we maintained the industry-best capital intensity ratio of 9.6%. So another excellent quarter of wireless results for Bell Wireless, leading the industry once again on all key financial metrics. Moving to Bell Wireline on slide 12, similar to Q4, total revenues decreased 1.5% as our business market results continued to be impacted by competitive pricing pressures and reduced customer spending on service solutions and data products as a result of the soft economy. This was partly offset by the solid performance of our residential services unit, which delivered revenue growth of 1%, our 10th consecutive quarter of year-over-year growth. Internet and TV revenue combined was up 6.6% in Q1, driven by continued market-leading broadband subscriber growth and higher household ARPU. However, overall growth was moderated by the cable competitors' very aggressive promotional bundle offers and a $13 million loss in revenue from a sale of a call center subsidiary last September. Normalizing for this, residential revenue was closer to 2%. Wireline EBITDA increased a steady 1.3%. That represents our seventh consecutive quarter of positive year-over-year growth. This yielded a strong 1.1% percentage point improvement in margin to an industry-best 42.1%, reflecting a 3.4% decline in operating costs that was driven by savings from organizational restructuring initiatives taken in Q4, service improvements, as well as the Bell Alliance integration savings that is now expected to reach $150 million compared to our original estimates of $100 million. Turning to Bell Media on slide 13, overall, a very good set of Q1 results, highlighted by the trifecta of positive revenue, EBITDA, and simple free cash flow growth. Total revenue up 2.1%, mainly on the strength of subscriber revenues and year-over-year growth of Astral out of home. Subscriber revenues increased 7%, driven mainly by the national expansion of the movie network in Western Canada on March 1st, as well as continued Crave TV and TV Everywhere growth. Consistent with our expectations, advertising revenue was down a modest 1.6% in the quarter. Q1 performance was impacted by general softness in the TV advertising market, reduced spending by some of our key customer segments, and stronger ratings for the World Junior Hockey in Q1 of 2015, as that event was held in Canada last year. Radio advertising also declined year-over-year, due mainly to weaker economy in Western Canada. Labor savings from workforce reductions in Q4 moderated overall operating cost growth for Bell Media in the quarter, contributing to a year-over-year EBITDA growth of 2.8% in Q1. Slide 14 provides the main components of adjusted EPS, which was in line with plan for Q1 at 85 cents per share. Higher EBITDA across all Bell operating segments drove a 6-cent year-over-year increase in EPS. Also contributing to higher EPS this quarter was the net pension financing costs, which decreased year-over-year, mainly as a result of the voluntary $250 million contribution we made at the end of 2015 that reduced our overall pension obligation. As expected, depreciation and amortization expense increased versus last year due to a higher capital asset base and service, while tax adjustments totaled 2 cents per share, down from 3 cents in Q1 of 15. Adjusted EPS also reflected dilution of around 3 cents per share this quarter due to the higher share count as a result of our $863 million equity issuance last December. Lastly, we also recognized an 8 cent per share mark-to-market gain on equity derivative contracts, resulting from the increase in BCE's share price in the quarter. However, this was offset by a foreign exchange loss on currency hedges related to our U.S. dollar-denominated expenditures, reflecting the recent sharp appreciation in the Canadian dollar. While those forward contracts do not qualify for hedge accounting, all of BCE's U.S.-denominated spending for 2016 has been hedged, and the majority of 2017 spending has been economically hedged as well, effectively insulating our free cash flow exposure from foreign exchange movements. Turning to slide 15, you will see that we generated free cash flow of $418 million this quarter, up $187 million compared to last year. This was driven primarily by higher EBITDA, a positive change in working capital attributable to the timing of supplier payments and reduced inventory, and a decrease in cash taxes due to a lower final installment payment made for the 2015 tax year. This was partly offset by higher severance payments related to workforce reductions in Q4 and higher planned CapEx. Free cash flow and working capital in particular tend to be seasonally low in Q1, so our performance this quarter was consistent with our planned cash flow generation and remains on track with guidance for the year. We also took advantage of the favorable market conditions and sustained low interest rates to further bring down our average cost of debt and to achieve preferred share dividend savings. On February 29th, we issued $750 million 10-year debenture with an after-tax coupon of approximately 2.6%. That brought our overall average after-tax cost of debt to under 3.4% and effectively completed our 2016 refinancing requirements. The net proceeds of that debt issuance were used to fund the early redemption of the MTN debt maturing in April and September, saving BCE $6 million in annualized interest costs. With respect to our preferred shares, we have reset the fixed dividend rate on two different series of preferred shares so far in 2016. That brought the average dividend rate on these two series down from 4.4% to approximately 2.7%. resulting in an annual savings of around $10 million. We also will be resetting the fixed dividend rate on three other series of preferred shares, having a total face value of $1.2 billion between now and the end of year. Finally, on pension, we have been very prudent in making voluntary contributions to our pension plans to address funding risk. Looking forward, an increase in interest rates in the range of 50 to 100 basis points would effectively eliminate BC's solvency deficit and significantly de-risk future cash flow requirements of our DB pension plan. Should we get to a surplus position, there would be an opportunity to reduce ongoing pension funding requirements by approximately $200 million, as we would not be obligated to pay the annual current service costs of our plans. That would be a meaningful upside to free cash flow. To wrap up on slide 16, with another good start to the year, no fundamental changes in our overall outlook, a business that is competitively well positioned across all services and in all markets, and our continued expectation for positive wireless, wireline, and media EBITDA growth for the full year of 16, I am reconfirming all of our financial guidance for the year. That concludes our formal remarks, and I'll now turn the call back over to Thane and the operator to begin Q&A.
Thanks, Glenn. So before we do start the Q&A period, just want to remind participants of our time constraints this morning, so please keep your questions short and focused so we can get to as many questions as possible. So, Wayne, we're ready to take our first question.
Thank you. Please press star one at this time if you have a question. Our first question is from Philip Huang from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I'm pleasantly surprised by how strong the wireless margin was, particularly given how competitive, March was in both your postpaid churn and net adds were quite strong. But my question is actually on the fixed line side. How would you characterize the competitive environment in Ontario and Quebec right now? Anecdotally, we are seeing increased promotions from both Rogers and Bell in Toronto in Q1, and they seem to be extending into Q2. I was just wondering if you can give us an update on the development in Toronto and also whether the competitive intensity is similar in Quebec. And then as a quick follow-on to that question, you have $800 to $1 billion in excess free cash flow after dividends every year. Under what circumstances would it make sense to accelerate your fiber to the home extension plans? Thanks.
Okay, great. Certainly two very different questions. First of all, all the markets are clearly competitive, both Quebec and Ontario, and it certainly does, move from quarter to quarter, sometimes month to month on the wireline business side between the provinces. Well, we clearly saw some very aggressive pricing in the market. My view is that's evident in financial results of our peers, and we're going to be competitive in the marketplace, and we'll continue to make sure we're competitive in the marketplace and leverage our advantage of having the best cost structure in telecom in North America as a result of our service improvements. So for investors, we'll go at it anyway in the marketplace required. Having said that, given we have a superior TV product in the market, it's evidenced by our TV growth. We're going to continue to position that as the superior product in the market. With the pull-through of the broadband as our strategy, consistent with what we've done the last 3 or 4 years, and, of course, the broadband piece will become even a more prominent piece of our strategy as we continue to roll out 1 gig fiber right to the home. And so in terms of the second part of the question, I don't think we're not looking at an acceleration of that program. We talked about this year's guidance, still keeping the capital intensity, at approximately the 17% across the three groups. Well, if we saw an acceleration in demand, that would be very positive. Of course, that would take additional capital as well. So it would be hard for me to see also then an acceleration in footprint. Having said that, if the metrics were as strong as we've seen in some of our Bell Alliance territories where you have really mature fiber markets, then clearly we could look at something. But right now that's not currently in our plans or outlook.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The following question is from Simon Flannery from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Great. George, you were talking about your leadership on 4K and a number of other initiatives, LTE Advanced, et cetera. How about 5G? We're hearing a lot more now about potential applications for fixed wireless, et cetera. What are your network guys saying about the potential there?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I would say it's, from our perspective, as I think most of the analysts have written, and even some of our peers around the world, I mean, it is certainly early days. We're a part of, what's going on a global basis. When we look out at the rollout now of and the enhanced LTE and the speeds we're providing and the fact that we've done fiber backhaul to literally all of our cell sites, we think we're extremely well positioned. The commercialization of 5G, the debate will go on as to when we really see that. Is it 18, 19, 20, 21? It's a hard read at this point. As has been seen in Canada, Canada's continued to lead the world in wireless technology. So if it becomes commercially something that is in the marketplace, clearly it's something that we will look at. And, of course, on the small cell capability, if you look at our footprint and our history of our other assets, we think that'll be a very important strategic piece for us of having a wireline and wireless integrated company as 5G evolves. And, of course, one of the concepts being written about this 5G allowing you something.
9:30 event?
Hello.
Yeah. Wayne, I'm sorry. I think we can hear you.
Yeah.
Can you put yourself on mute?
Thank you. On the other issue on 5G, it looks like it would be incredible technology in the rural markets, but the challenge there, of course, is can you get to the cell site density? So we'll see over the years on that. But thanks for the question.
Thanks.
Thank you. The following question is from Greg McDonald from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and good morning, guys. So this is the first quarter in a couple of years that we've seen, albeit a slight decrease in gross adds on the postpaid side on a year-over-year basis. And so, look, I'll acknowledge, George, you commented certainly the 1Q is a lower quality read-through. And we actually did see some price increases go through in the quarter, so that could be the impact there alone. We also saw a decrease in churn in the quarter. And so I guess as a broad question, what I'm going to ask is, have we kind of seen the top of industry gross ad growth, which is going to force a shift toward churn as a greater focus for net ad gross overall? And if that's the case, it still seems like you guys have some downside on churn. As a stretch target, is it safe to say that a sub 1% postpaid churn target is something that you could achieve over time? Thanks.
If we did achieve post 1%, the financial results would obviously be material different than they are now. And as you know, they're top in North America in terms of what we're performing on. My perspective on the gross adds, and we were down 1.3% year over year, and I think we did see some gross market share in March move. But you know, you can see that we're able to manage our churn down. I do think, though, philosophically, it's about managing the bases that you now have relative to. You know, 26,000 is a nice net add number, but on the perspective of the size of our base, clearly our investment is got to be on how do we drive the churn numbers down. I think, and you know, geographically, one of our challenges, of course, is, you know, some of our markets have you know, more four players in some of our larger markets, and so it makes it a little trickier to get down to sub one. I will tell you that the Bell brand is quite frankly at basically 1% on postpaid churn. So it's again, of course, gets weighted in a little bit by the numbers that we do through our positioning of the Virgin brand.
And just as a quick follow-on to that, is it safe to say that the majority of your gross ads on postpaid are the Bell brand still, or has that now shifted toward the flanker brands?
It's actually been both. You know, we don't split it out. We clearly see quarter to quarter, different times a year, where the consumer market will be very strong. Like take a fourth quarter, and there's no doubt there's a weighting of some of the you know, the Virgin type brands and that type of mix in a Q4. And in a first quarter where you don't see as much consumer activity, you know, our quarter, for instance, would be a little more B2B focused, and that's literally 100% Bell brand.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Question, please.
Thank you. The following question is from Maher Yaghi from Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. George, I wanted to just go back to a comment you made on the wholesale side on internet. What's driving this pressure? Is it Rogers giving away more discounts to wholesalers to get more subs? And I mean, what's the bottom line impact of those sub losses? Because likely you get a better profitability and on your residential side with multiple products sold to them rather than just internet or home phone, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a competitive market in the quarter on wholesale. And I won't comment much more on that other than your other key point is you're right. I mean, the ARPUs for us on a wholesale customer, you know, because we're wholesaling, it would be 50% of a retail. And so clearly and different in the churn metrics on wholesale are so dramatically worse relative to retail. And, of course, there's no bundling of the product. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I talked to it on the quarter that and why our consumer revenue that Glenn talked about was so strong because really it's broadband growth of IPTV and internet on the retail side where we've got to be, where our focus has to be. We like getting wholesale customers, but clearly we saw an impact in the quarter on that.
how much more should we expect to see on that side in the next couple of quarters, and maybe what's, you know, really driving this shift?
Yeah, you know, it's a hard one. One, we wouldn't give a forecast, but, you know, it does seem to bounce around quarter to quarter. I think sometimes the wholesale market will, quite frankly, we'll see churn probably go up at cable and come down at us, and then it goes up at us and goes down over there. And others can reverse back and forth, but we have some, quite frankly, switching going on by wholesalers in the marketplace. We've seen that for a period of time, and we certainly saw it go against us in the first quarter. But, you know, the money for the return on investment that we need for the country to have on broadband all comes from having a retail structure in the marketplace and the bundles that we're able to get to the consumer.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Drew McReynolds from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Good morning, George. Just on the wireline side, saw a little bit more revenue pressure in the quarter, but obviously offsetting that with pretty impressive cost efficiencies. Can you just comment on the key drivers of those cost efficiencies? Are they changing? And how is fiber to the home feeding into your ability to take costs out? Thank you.
Yeah, so on the revenue side, important again for everyone to, you know, separate the hardware, obviously, from the service revenue, as Glenn talked to, because the hardware really, there's nothing in it for us other than pulling through some additional services. And then on cost structure, it's across the board. We really do see, as we talked about, the telco of the future and what we're evolving to with the service tools we're putting in the hands of our customers and what fiber is doing in terms of what we call it dropping the assurance rate, which, again, for everyone on the call, would be the amount of times we need truck rolls for repair. Those numbers continue to drop, and as a result, our costs continue to drop. And as you improve service, of course, the calls into the call center come down and satisfaction levels go up. And so it's a very interesting circle, if you will, in terms of what we're seeing. And as a result, our costs continue to come down to deliver the service, which is what we need in order to make the CapEx investments we're going to make on fiber. And, you know, I think what's most encouraging is the margins we're producing give us the headroom for the capital intensity levels we need to make sure the country has the best broadband networks, and that's what we're positioning on. But we think the margins are hard to say they'll go up, but what's most important is the cost of delivering some of the services come down as we improve service to the customer. And this is really the fourth or fifth year in a row we've seen this.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, last thing I should add, as Glenn mentioned, you know, we are seeing continued benefits of the Bell Alliance, Bell coming together, just synergies across the board, and not necessarily all on the East Coast, but just consolidating operations no matter where they're consolidated, seeing the benefits there as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Batya Levy from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. I want to ask something about the wireless segment. Retention expense came down, but cost of acquisition went up a little bit. As you mentioned, there were more handset promotions towards the end of the quarter. How should we think about those two levers into the second quarter?
Retention spend was actually, in absolute dollars, it was up, but it was flat as a percent of revenue at 11.8. So, you know, I think that's a fair, if you looked at our year-over-year numbers, you might almost want to model in last year's, but as a percent of revenue. So, you know, we tend to think about if our revenue went up $50 million in a quarter on service revenue, then we'd multiply that roughly by 12% in that quarter and say that's what you might see the increase in retention. We're hoping we can keep it there. It can get pretty volatile. On the gross ad side, the cost per gross ad was up 9.3% year-over-year. And that was really two things. We had more postpaid gross sales than prepaid, which is a much higher cost for us. And secondly, the dollar had an impact on our subsidies. So that actually went up, but I think you had mentioned it went down, so I just want to make sure we're clear. But the total gross sales of postpaid dropped 1.3. Wouldn't have been enough to take down our total COA. What is interesting, if you take our COA and COM, the $23 million that Glenn talked about, out of our cost of wireless, our other operating costs clearly dropped year over year pretty significantly.
Right. COA, I noticed that it went up, and you mentioned that there were more promotions also from competitors. Do you expect that to continue into the second quarter?
For my lifetime.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The following question is from Jeff Fan from Scotia. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. I wanted to just clarify, the residential ARPU was up 10%, and that's a great number. Just wondering what the absolute dollar roughly is on the residential ARPU. And then just a quick follow-on related to that, you're overbuilding fiber in a lot of your fiber-to-the-node areas. I'm wondering, given the early results, whether you're getting the incremental ARPU that you think it's necessary to kind of drive the return on fiber. And also, along with that, on the ARPU side, whether customers are actually looking at a double play service on FTTH versus a triple play, just because, you know, there's less emphasis on phone. And if they have a big broadband pipe, they probably don't need TV. Just wondering if you can comment on that.
Yeah, a couple points. One, we're not going to give our ARPU out on the consumer side. We just don't disclose that. Secondly, on, we have the Alliant experience, Quebec City experience. Most people, as we said, a dramatic number are always taking a double, and on the triple, it's about 63% in total. And then in terms of the return on capital, we're just going where the market's going. This debate seems to be raised over and over. With our margins and our capital intensity numbers, our free cash flow, EBITDA minus C, is by far the most superior in North America. And as a result, for our shareholders, it gives us the headroom to go where the market's going, which is going to be 1 gig services. And as we roll these services out, it will surpass 1 gig services, and our competitors will have to even make their capital investments to do those. But the metrics we get out of the markets that we've done fiber are lower churn than FTTN, lower assurance levels, better ARPU, and better penetration of subscriber results. And in all of our markets where we're FTTN or FTTH, we are positive RGUs every single quarter. And so the investment to us is quite frankly a bit of a no-brainer.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The following question is from Aravinda Galapatig from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Obviously, a little while ago, we saw Rogers make the decision to sort of, take Sportsnet over the top. With respect to TSN, you know, what variables would you be looking at in terms of making a similar decision? I was wondering if you can share sort of the pros and cons in your mind with respect to that. Thanks.
I think it's a bit of a strategic question, so be a little careful. We did clearly watch what was done by our competitor. We clearly watched the pricing on that, which I think is obviously something that was thought through in the marketplace, and we see that. We at the moment are very, very happy with the distributors we have carrying our product and the method they distribute the product. And so at the moment, we're not looking to compete with our distributors on TSN, and we think that's a competitive advantage, not competing with our distributors, who are really, really important customers for us. As the market evolves, we'll evolve with it, and clearly that's one of the, as buying preferences evolve over time and as we build fiber out, clearly some of our core products have the ability to go into that OTT world. We started that with our Crave product, and that's really what that approach has been.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Bentley Cross from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. I wanted to ask a question on acquisitions. Obviously, we're continuing to see...
Sorry, we can't hear you, Bentley. Hi. Sorry, Bentley. Are you still there? Okay, let's go to the next question.
Thank you. The following question is from Richard Cho from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to follow up on the churn question. It's the first time in about a year where it's actually been down year over year versus being up over 10 basis points generally. Are we through the double cohort, or is it more effective retention, or is it just less customer activity? Any comment on that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, I actually think it's the three you hit are kind of what we saw happen. I mean, double cohort's further along. First quarter does generally just the amount of consumer activity can be less, so you get the benefits of that. And clearly, the surveys that came out from three independent organizations that said our network's the fastest in the country, that's real, and it helps you keep customers. And, you know, we are the only, I think, other than two other countries in the world, Bell's the only one who's launched Cat9 devices. And that means they're the fastest phones available literally on the planet. And that leadership, of course, we use in our sales, and we think that's part of what we get in seeing some improvement in churn. I mean, I don't want to overplay it. It wasn't dramatically improvement, but it's certainly moving the right direction. And you know, the one other comment, just it was we were early on talking about the fiber. You know, we do have the fiber to the cell sites build out as well. And, of course, those fiber investments for us to the home are all a function of what we're doing now in the urban markets, because we've got to compete. And the expansion of that in the rural markets, of course, also becomes a function of making sure we have the right environment from a wholesale pricing perspective. And as everyone knows, we've appealed that particular decision to Cabinet and are waiting on the response to that decision. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. The following question is from Rob Peters from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my question. I just wanted to kind of circle back. You know, we've seen Pick and Pay in the market for, you know, almost 2 months now. I'm just curious what the initial feedback you've seen on both a wireline and media side of things. Particularly, some comments have indicated that, you know, that if you have seen subscribers switch to Pick and Pay, it's generally been a very niche segment, and they've been focused not necessarily on the sports side of things. I'm wondering if you've seen that from any subscribers that you may see move over to the plans, as well as kind of what you're seeing on the media side of things.
I think you're correct. It's been it's a service we have in the marketplaces, but you know when customers start to build packages up, the way we've packaged our traditional products is trying to meet the demands of customers anyway. So it has been generally a niche product so far, and not really that significant impact on Bell Media overall on Bell. It's just an additional choice, and some customers who really want that type of price point that we brought to the marketplace have that capability to purchase those products. But there's, you know, people's appetite for all the different media content we have now is really what's driving it. It is worth noting, though, you know, the Canadian, TV ARPU, you know, on general in the country, $60 to $70, does run about $20 less than in the U.S. already. And so, you know, we have a very competitive TV market, and sometimes, you know, that's lost in all of this, that Canadians are paying roughly $20 less a month for their TV bill in the United States based on publicly available ARPUs out of the U.S. TV providers.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The following question is from Bentley Cross from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Sorry about that earlier. I wanted to ask a question on acquisitions. Obviously, we're continuing to see Bell Alliance synergies run through. Just curious if you guys follow the same playbook, how far astray might you be willing to go from the core next time around? Obviously, in the U.S., we're seeing those guys go further and further from conventional telco, and wondering what your thoughts are there. Thanks. Bye.
In we think there's ample opportunity in Canada with our fiber investment and our wireless business. So, you know, our focus is head down, making sure for our shareholders we're executing well in Canada.
Thank you. Next question. And actually, this will be our last question, Wayne, given our time constraints this morning with our AGM.
Thank you. So the last question will be from Michael Rollins from Citi Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the questions. Curious, as you think about ARPU performance in the postpaid market over time, what's your internal methodology to think about how that can grow? Do you look at it as an inflation business? Is it based on, you know, some analysis of usage that you do, and you can see where the average customer is going, maybe versus your most active customers? If you can give us some insight into, you know, how you look at that, and then is there any updates on other regulatory initiatives that are going on in Canada, you know, for example, the wholesale rate in wireless or on the fiber side? Thank you.
So I'll end on the first one. You know, the one regulatory file, as people I think know, but just in case they don't, we have made an appeal to Cabinet on our fiber investment, asking that there not be mandated resale to the new fiber network that we're building, and we're awaiting that response from Cabinet over the next number of months, whether or not they'll send that back to the CRTC and ask them to take another look at that. because quite frankly, I think most people understand the urban investments would happen, but on a national broadband strategy that we're focused on in the country, pretty hard to get returns on capital appropriate for the people on this phone in rural markets if you're also forced to resell those services. So that's a decision we're watching, and we'll wait to see how that comes out. And I'm sorry, the first question was?
On the ARPU side, when you think of modeling your postpaid ARPU, the analog that you use for that, whether it's an inflation-based methodology or, you know, where if you look at your early adopters in terms of usage and think about how your average customer is going to migrate towards that over time.
Yeah, I'd say certainly less on an inflation side. I mean, a lot of our pricing strategies are now more about larger bundles and less variable out of the bucket for the customer base. And particularly that's also as we see the movement to Wi-Fi, making sure that, you know, we're getting the right ARPU returns from a fixed perspective for the investments that we're making. And then what we really just continue to see is from a Bell perspective, usage growing as customers migrate to these advanced networks. It's why we're trying to lead on LTE Advanced, because we see a higher usage. And secondly, in our positioning in the marketplace, on the business market side and the SMB market, making sure we're gaining market share there where, quite frankly, the ARPU and the churn metrics can be stronger. So that's really what our focus is. But we don't really particularly do it so much on a CPI basis, certainly not yet. Of course, as the industry starts to mature and we're getting there, that'd probably be a spot we'll start to look at.
Thanks very much.
Great. So thank you to all who participated this morning. I'll be available later today after our AGM for any follow-ups and questions and clarifications. So thanks again. Have a great day.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.